Welcome to the Vietnamese podcast. Today, I have a really special guest that I've been waiting. As always, I wait for some of these guests for a long time. I have Vũ and Jenny from Cuộc Sống Di Động, right? Means the nomad life, I guess, the way we can translate that. So welcome to the podcast. Say it again.
Thank you. Good morning.
Where are you guys right now?
We're in Tennessee. Tennessee and UCL background. We're at an RV resort.
Yeah. Before we get to how you even got to Tennessee, how did you guys meet? What's your love story?
I used to work for the automotive industry. When we met, I was in car sales, and we actually got introduced from a mutual friend of mine. And at that time, Jenny was in the market of looking for a car to go to college, and she was adamant about buying a X3.
And, like a BMW X3?
Yeah, a BMW X3. She loved the style. She loved how the SUV just looked. But she had a certain budget that she was working with. She visited my friend at this BMW dealership, and he couldn't help her out because he just couldn't find a car, that specific car, within the budget that she was in. And happened, I was working for a Honda dealership at that time in New Jersey. And my friend hit me up, and he's just like, man, I have this like really cute girl, and she's really cute girl. She's Vietnamese, you know. You don't have a girlfriend, and I really think that you should help her out, right? Do you have a car or anything like that? And she's looking for an X3, and at that time, I had an X3 too at the lot. We're a Honda dealership. We don't typically carry BMWs, but I happen to have one, and it was over her price point, but I was like, you know what? She's a cute girl. Let me see if I can try to sell her a car, right? So I took out her information. We made an appointment. She came in with her mom, and long story short, I sold Jenny a car, not the car that she was looking to buy, by the way. I sold her a sedan. It was a BMW.
An old man sedan.
I sold her a 5 Series, and it had like over 100,000 miles on it, but we made it work.
Mind you that at this point, I was like 2 months in to looking every single week for a car, and I couldn't find one yet because I was so set on getting a SUV, and I ended up marrying him and getting a sedan. I don't know how he did it.
Wow, what a cool story. Okay, but then how did it go from being somebody who helps you buy a car to like dating? It's like a graphic, right? Let's, you know.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, let's keep it like very like family friendly, right?
What's very PG? Trust me.
Well, in the car industry, we have this saying, but it's never written in book. You don't ever ask your client out for a date because it can really backfire. So however, I thought she was really cute and I really wanted to ask her on a date. I kind of always had this behind my head, like, hey, don't do this because you can really burn some bridges. So I didn't ask her out, but then she keep on sticking in my mind, and I can tell you this right now, this is a one-sided story. I don't think she felt that way about me at all, but
I had no thoughts.
It's savage. Jenny's so savage.
but she just keep on sticking in my mind, and then and a month went by, I knew her license plate was gonna have to come in. And I was like, you know what? Whenever her license plate come in, I will try again. So long story short, her license plate came in. She had a little bit of an oil problem. All BMW had oil problem. I used to work for BMW as a mechanic for 3 years. So all of them have oil problem. I tip off her oil, and I didn't ask her out again. I let her leave because you know what? She came in with like 3 of her uncles that just came from Vietnam, and I'm talking about, you know, I was alone. I was loner. I didn't want to get beat up or anything by her uncle. So I was like, you know what? I'm not gonna ask this girl out. But when she drove home, it's just eating me inside. I was like, man, if I don't do it, you know, what's the worst that can happen? She say no, right? So I was out for lunch and I shot her a text message. I was like, you want to go for a movie and stuff? And then she ended up saying yes, gave me a chance.
Wow. But Jenny, why did you give him a chance?
Why did I give him a chance? I mean, I thought, like, you know, why not a free lunch date, dinner?
Savage. You know, I need to have all this background information because what life you guys are living right now is mind-blowing. And it's not mind-blowing just as American people would see it, but as Vietnamese people. Because I think in Vietnamese culture, in America and Vietnam, we all have this cultural mentality of buying a house, you know, like getting situated. You know, and I know this has got to be so many of our fantasies, is to find this girl, find this boy, and go and have a family and raise a family on the road and travel America. You guys are so young and you guys are doing this. And, you know, I know a lot of us are like looking going, when in Vietnamese we say, tam chai nik, you know, like, you know, we're just drooling, looking at... You know, the way you guys are living, and it's beautiful. So then, okay, so what, that's why I needed to kind of hear this backstory of like how you guys, you know, got together. And then you guys, you're working at the car dealership, and Jenny, what are you doing?
I was in college. Mm-hmm. And I was a second year in Rutgers studying engineering.
Okay. At what point do you guys think about like getting married, and while you're getting married, do you guys ever have this talk about like running away and being on the road living?
No,
we were dead on, make a lot of money, have a house, and have kids, and live a, I guess, lavish lifestyle when we made a lot of money.
Yeah.
Have a big house, have nice cars, and all of that.
Yeah, yeah. I grew up, you know, I think like a lot of Vietnamese American that came to America, our family, we come here with nothing. And our parents had to kind of like structure that foundation for us. But my parents was definitely not financially... within the realm of like, you know, starting their own business. They just like to work and try to take care of their kids the best the way they can. So I grew very conservatively in a way where get good grades, get a good job, get a house, settle down. And that's kind of the thing that I was kind of stuck into. Jenny actually brought it into our relationship very early on that she wanted to live in the middle of nowhere on a farm and stuff like that. And I told her she is freaking crazy. You know, I don't want that. I wanted to live in a high rise. I wanted to live in the big city, and I want to put my head down and just work really hard.
Yeah. But of course, like, I want to support him, whatever, you know, he was the breadwinner. I want to support him, whatever he want to do. Like, I wanted to go that direction. But I know eventually it will, like, go my direction. But for that time being, you know, whatever.
Let this be a cautionary tale for all men out there. They control, women control everything. They make you think that you're making decisions.
Yeah. We think it's our idea. But at the end of it, I think behind the scene, it's always their idea.
Big mistake. Huge mistake. So how long until you guys get married?
Yeah, I've always knew that when I was gonna grow up, and I always knew I wanted kids. And I always knew I wanted kids young. And the whole thesis behind having kids young was to be able to let them grow up and you still be young and still be able to do stuff with them.
Yeah.
And that was my idea. And I don't know if it was hers or not, but we had Zoe before getting married.
Yep.
So the and she was still in college at that time. I just took on a management role at the car dealership. And we were a long distance relationship.
So when I find out in college that I was pregnant, my second semester of second year, I was actually really thrilled because I didn't. At that point, I didn't really want to continue my study anymore before being pregnant. So I was actually pretty thrilled that I was pregnant. Like, I didn't want to do engineering anyways.
And your mom and dad, what did they say? Like, both sides?
Well, my mom didn't like it. Of course, you know, my girl, she's going to college. She's going to have this great career and all of that. Of course, she didn't like it. But eventually, you know, she'll see, yeah, she's okay with it.
My mom and dad was thrilled.
Through.
They couldn't wait to see their grandkids.
I mean, I was 19.
I was
20.
No, you were 20. You were 19 pregnant, birth and 20, I think, right?
No, 20, birth and 21.
Okay, there you go.
And how old were you at the time, Vu?
Yeah, I was 23 at the time.
Young.
24. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yep. But we were so happy.
Yeah.
I guess a few months in, I quit college and then I packed my bags, all of it, and we drove to Texas?
No, Oklahoma. To Oklahoma.
And we started a new life together.
Yep.
Doing what? What did you go to Oklahoma for?
Yeah, I was working. I just took a management role in a dealership in Oklahoma. So we were working there. I was working for a Honda dealership and then slowly transitioned to be a director for a BMW dealership after.
And at what point do you guys look at each other and go, we need to get on the road and get out of here?
No, that didn't happen until like further in my career. And my mentality at the time when we had Zoe, I think
we're talking 10 years ago here.
Yeah, 10 years ago. Yeah, this was
Zoe is 10 now.
Zoe's 10 years old now. Yeah,
this is 10. So, we didn't start traveling until she was 6.
Mm-hmm.
So that's about 4 years.
Yeah, and then when we had our kids, I think a lot of parents can probably relate to this, is that once we realized that we had kids, we realized that we have to take care of this person that we're about to bring to the war. So my mindset, and I think both of our mindset at that time, was just being super locked in, being very career driven, and just put our head down and just work really hard and just become a workhorse. So I was working 6 days a week, probably 10 to 11 hours every single day, hardly ever see Jenny, and then eventually afterward we found our way in Austin, and I continued to climb that corporate ladder in the car industry, bought our dream house, bought a bunch of things to kind of fill the void, and then she always told me, let's go camping, let's take vacations and do all these things. And I just told her, I don't have time for this. Like, I have a whole dealership that I need to manage. I have a bunch of people that depend on me to feed their family.
He was still working when we got married, like the day before we got married, he was like at work. So,
yeah, no honeymoon, no nothing.
And this keeps going on. And when do you eventually agree to go camping?
Yeah. It kept going on, and the camping didn't really start. We kind of like slowly pushed me towards like being okay with taking break time away from work. So the first trip that we've ever done was kind of take a vacation, and it was hard for me to kind of like take a week off of work because I was like, man, I don't know how much work I need to come back to or anything like that. So the first time we ever did anything was just taking a week vacation, and we went to Cancun.
Cancun, yeah.
Yeah, we went to Cancun, and it's the first time ever.
Two at that point.
Yeah, Zoe was two. First time ever I was out of the country or went anywhere.
Like regular vacation, like any other family should have,
right? And I was hooked. But, I was hooked.
No, well, not hooked on vacation.
Yeah,
but no, at that point we still not like, oh, less so. It's when you were deciding. One day he came home, which is about 5 years ago. He came home and he say, "I'm gonna quit my job." And at that point of his career, he was making like a lot of money. Like the car industry was top of his, you know, place. And we had a really nice house in a really good school district, nice neighborhood, and car of our dreams, basically.
Yeah.
And he say, "I want to quit my job." And I say, "Okay, let's do it."
Yeah, I thought she was crazy. I made it as kind of like a joke. You know, when we work so hard, we get so frustrated with our environment and where we're in. I think every person kind of have that thought process. And it was kind of more of like a joke. I was like, a joke was serious at the same time. And then I couldn't believe that she supported me through that decision. And
that got into his head and he's thought about it more and more. And at this point of our life, we started to invest. Start investing in us and in money and all of that. So I guess that's like the first initial of getting out, yeah, getting out of the system, of the American system, where you had to work to pay the bills.
Yeah, we start building a financial layer to kind of help us feel more comfortable with making that decision. So yeah, shortly after that, I decided to quit my job at my career.
It was 5 years ago.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So, but before you quit your job, you have to know that whatever money you had was able to grow that could support whatever you're going to be doing. No?
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, we have some little thoughts about that, but really we're kind of like just all in. No? We're like, if this, yeah, we're just kind of all in. We didn't really think of anything like that.
We had a house that had the $3,500 mortgage on it, plus, you know, two car with, that's like $5,000 a month that come out. And we had some money in the bank at that point.
Yeah.
But after he quit his job, of course, money weren't flowing in. So a year in, we're like, oh, damn. How are we going to do this without, you know, money keep on feeding this house? We decided.
Well, we realized that we didn't need the house anymore. Yeah. We realized that after I quit my job and I was at home spending so much time with the family. Camping. Yeah, we went camping for the very first time. We had a
Sienna.
Yeah, we bought a Sienna. We put a pop-up tent on top of it and we drove it. We've always wanted to visit California. That was like the ultimate dream. I watched Vong Sung when I was growing up, and one of my bucket lists was to visit Little Saigon in California. That was one of my bucket lists. I had to do that before anything in life. And tell you a funny story is that we didn't make it. That first trip, we didn't make it that far. We made it to Vegas, and then we realized that we don't have any more fuel in the tank. We've been sleeping inside of this pop-up tent for the past 2 weeks or so.
Yeah.
And we don't have any more fuel in the tank to continue our road trip.
But we loved it so much.
Yeah, but we love the experience. We head back and then we just got addicted to that experience about just being camping, being within nature, seeing our kids running around, playing with dirt, trees. I mean, the animals, and just to being able to explore the country in a minivan in a pop-up tent, you know?
And then I start looking into homeschooling. And Zoe was in kindergarten at that point. And then I started looking at homeschooling, and I started to like talk about homeschooling to him. And I guess convince him that we can homeschool the kid. We don't have to like be here for them to go to school.
I thought she was crazy about the homeschooling thing. I was like, this is a crazy thought. I did not agree to that at all.
Up to this point, I think you both are crazy, but it's amazing.
I think we both think that we're crazy, but then we always try to like, we don't ever, I think with our relationship, we don't ever just shut it off completely. We always try to listen to it and hear the other person sigh and see the pros and the cons. And we always sit down and we always talk about our pros and cons. And we try to have an open mind about our conversation and make sure we hear the other person out. So when I thought she was crazy, I kind of like brushed it off my shoulder. But then she was pretty adamant about it. And she found out that down the street from us, we had a homeschool convention in Austin that hosts every year. So I went to the homeschool convention and we start learning more about, you know, the homeschool system. And I start talking to the people that have been homeschooling for, you know, their first generation, their third generation, their fourth generation. And they came out to the workforce, they're engineers, they're doctors, they're all of these things. And they're business owners. And I was like, man, this is so wild. Like you're doing all of this that I thought only someone that go to school can be able to do. And that's how I was programmed. I was
open mind.
Yeah. And then it really opened my mind. And I started talking to so many doctors, engineers, business owners, even entrepreneurs. And they're all homeschoolers. And they're like, yeah, we've been homeschooled for generations now. Our kids will be homeschooled for the next generations. And then our kids and kids and kids. So I completely bought into the system after that.
My God. This is getting even more wild than I thought. Okay. It seems to me that both of you were not born in the US, because I follow your channel and the way you guys speak Vietnamese is like super fluent. You guys grew up in Vietnam, or I know Jenny probably did, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I came when I was 10.
10. And Vu, how old were you?
Yeah, I came when I was about 5.
So do you guys remember Vietnam at all?
very sure. Well, she probably remembers Vietnam a lot more than I do. I remember Vietnam very vague. I grew up in the southern part of Vietnam. I was born in the southern part of Vietnam. Our family worked in the rice field. Doesn't really have much. I remember the hard time. I don't really remember. I remember the great time too. I mean, just being a farm raised kid in the rice field, you get to kind of have a lot of freedom, just kind of do whatever you want. So, yeah, little tiny memories. So not too much on my end.
Yeah, when I was in Vietnam, I stayed with my grandma, and she has 10 kids. So like all 9 of her kids were raising me basically. My mom was in America when I was in Vietnam. She gave birth to me, and then she went to America, you know, do her thing so she can have like a stable job before getting me over. So yeah, 10 years later, I came over. So yeah, I had good memory in Vietnam because I was like the only grandkid in Vietnam, you know.
And did you grow up in Saigon?
No, nearby there, Binh Hoa.
Binh Hoa, okay. Binh Hoa is pretty busy.
It was Minh Tai.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, when I think about your story and I'm watching it happening, you know, and I'm listening to the Vietnamese that you guys are speaking in, and I'm like, it would already be mind blowing if it was an American born kid like me, right? I'm 50 years old, born in the US. Mm-hmm. I'm like, nobody would kind of bat an eye or be surprised about, you know, some American kid doing this with their white girlfriend or their, you know, like this American way of living. But this is like what really, you know, it made me question a lot about Vietnamese people taking massive risk like this, you know, especially the stories that I know in my family of Nhung Người Mới Qua. You know, if you grew up in Vietnam, you know, and you value money in a way that is like you're gonna put your nose down to and grind till you become completely independent. But you guys taking if your child wants to hang out with you, I'm very open to that.
Oh no, she's coming.
Oh okay. don't hold back if she wants to come on. You know.
Oh no, she's coming. I can't. We can't stop her.
Yeah. Yeah. So this mentality of having, you know, this security of.
Say hi.
Hi. How are you? For everybody who's not watching the video and listening, your daughter just rolled into screen, huh?
Yeah.
Youngest one.
Yeah. She just woke up. So she's a little bit of a mess right now.
Oh. Yeah, so this mentality, you know, of safety is so prevalent in Vietnamese culture when you first come to the U.S., you know. And it sounds like that's not something that you guys really care about.
No, I mean, I care about it a lot back because I grew up in that family that we came here with nothing. So we gotta make a lot and we gotta do everything that we can to make a lot, and I never understood why I had to make so much or why that I have to do this in a certain order like this. I just knew that because we had nothing, we're gonna try to make a lot. And then she come into my life and give me a completely different perspective. She's like, I don't want a lot. Actually, I have never bought Jenny any name brand stuff. We have always been very, you know, very frugal when it comes to like, you know, shopping for clothing or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And she's like, I don't need money. And I was like, why not? And I was like, money, you know, 10 years ago, I would tell you money buy me happiness. And anyone that will tell me otherwise, I would deny it. And she told me, when you die, you can't bring your money with you. And even though how fathom that is to kind of say a sentence like that, it's the truth. And then I started realizing that you can make millions of dollars, and if you have you have no memories, and if you have no ginim to bring to yourself and your loved ones and everyone that's in your life, and create happiness and environment of positive energy around you, then none of this money and none of this wealth is gonna mean anything.
Were you gonna say something, Jenny?
No, I lost my train of thought on that one. Yeah. No, because money is a whole different subject, right? For me, I always think that like anything is possible. Like, you can do or be anything you want to be, just living here in America. So, like, if I want to be a doctor, I'm sure if I work hard enough, I can be a doctor. But, like, is that what, you know, what I really want in life? Right. So we're just talking and we're like, what do we really want? What would make us like feel free and feel happy inside? And it come to let's travel. We both wanted to travel, and we started do our travel planning, and we thought we wanted to travel Asia for a few years.
For 5 years.
For That's
kind of our plan. Uh-huh. We decided to sell the house. Jenny kind of cut ties with the business that she was in at the time. We start liquidating all of our furniture, clothes, cars, everything.
A lot of stuff, because it was a 3,000 square foot house. We had a lot of stuff to fill that, right? So we just sell and give everything away. There was one day where I put up a Facebook marketplace and I was like, come take anything you want in my closet.
Yeah, it's free. It's all free.
You come and just grab it. And I had no feeling towards it, like zero feeling towards it.
Yeah, we had people that come with like flatbed trailers to come pick up stuff from us, because we were just giving everything away. We're just like, please just come take it.
And we had four luggage. Yeah, that's all we had left. Four luggage, no storage, no nothing. Yeah.
Yep. And we hop on a plane and we lived in Vietnam for 6 months because we thought we wanted to travel Asia. Mm-hmm. We wanted to discover all of Asia. And then after 6 months of living in Vietnam, we realized how much we really miss America and the culture, the diversity, the food, everything in America. We really miss it. And it just happened at our last 6 months in Vietnam, one of our distant family member did a Facebook post. So.
Uh-huh. And then he was like, I need a house sitter in Alaska. I need a house sitter for a month. And I show him, I'm like, do you want to do it?
So last minute in Vietnam, our last month in Vietnam, I bought a truck sight unseen. Didn't go see it or anything like that. We bought a Ford Ranger. We did all the wire transfer and everything. We flew back to America, pick up the truck, took it off-roading because we thought we're going to do a lot of off-roading going up to Alaska, trying to test our ability. Then we went to an RV dealership and bought a 19-foot travel trailer. First time ever hauling an RV, first time everything with an RV. We hook it up and we made a 1 month road trip all the way up to Alaska. And we were hooked.
4,000 mile, 4,000 to 5,000 mile trip.
Yeah, no. And we babysit this person's house for a whole month and a month and a half. And that 1 month and a half was so awesome. We discovered Alaska. We went a lot of hiking.
So and, we like, this is every RVer's dream to make a trip to Alaska. So we did that first. We knocked that out of the park.
Oh my God. And when you guys are getting ready to go, the math for the economics of your family, look, I know it could be sensitive. I don't know how much you are willing to share.
Sharing.
Okay, mm-hmm. I would love to hear how much do you need? How did you make your money grow? I mean, I'm sure a lot of people, I mean, especially me, I'm here for that conversation. How do we escape this matrix that we're in right now? The entire world of working 9 to 5 just kills a lot of people. How do you make this work financially?
Yeah, so we knew in the beginning when I quit my job for the first year when we still had the house, we knew that we got to invest. And we knew that we have to make money work for us. And I think a really good book to read, and you have a lot of book behind you, and I think a really good book to read and really open our mind was Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And from Robert Kiyosaki. And he talked about money and how money works. And that really, like, I was like, really eye-opening for us. So we went down the rabbit hole. I think any new traders went into was day trading, because we thinking that this was going to be the end-all, be-all. It's going to be the career and it's going to solve. We realized that we made a lot of money and we realized that we can lose it just as fast. So we pivot and we start learning more about investing, and we start learning really how to really have a compound investments account. And we just believe in the U.S. market. We believe that the U.S. as an economy is always going to go up, and we, and as a U.S. citizen, and as and yeah, we just believe in it. So we go into all in onto diversifying ourselves into ETFs, index funds, and everything like that, and knowing that it's going to be a slow growth. But it's going to be a consistent slow growth, and it's going to compound and everything like that. So we start looking into ETF. We start looking into dividends, ETFs that give us a high dividends return. And yeah, that's kind of how we...
Well, we're not saying that that like cover all our expenses or anything. We'd had a lot of saving.
Yeah, we did have a lot of savings as well.
I guess we hit the jackpot of the market of housing at that time.
Yeah, you sold at the right time.
Right.
We sold it. We bought it at the right time, sold it at the right time. So we had a large chunk of money that we feel confident that like we can last a few years.
Right.
Even with no making money.
Right.
So, but in our mind, we always want to make our own income, which we lean towards social media, perhaps YouTube or whatever that is self-made, like magic internet money that people talk about. Like, wow, people are making magic money, internet money. Can we have some of that? You know, like, I'm sure if we work hard, we can get some.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I've always wanted to be a YouTuber. It was kind of been like one of my biggest dreams, because I've watched so many Asian YouTuber growing up and
made a lot of money.
Not for the money, but just how fundamentally it is. I've always thought if I was a way that I can record all of our family moments and put it into a server and rewatch it again, how can I do that without being super scared of the camera and not know and fumbling our words? So it was always been something that it's always been kind of in my mind to kind of do something like that, and we're just too scared of doing it.
Yeah.
Too scared of being in front of the camera, too scared of talking in front of the camera. So yeah, one day I told her, let's go ahead and do this. And we actually, this channel that you found us in was not our first channel. We had a very beginning channel that was just in English because I was not confident in Vietnamese at all. And Jenny didn't want to be on camera talking in Vietnamese. So we did a whole English channel for a year, and it's kind of on and off. And it taught us a lot of life lesson with the whole talking in front of the camera. And then one day her grandma was like, I really love to follow you guys' journey. I just can't watch any of your English stuff. I don't understand it. And the family was like, why don't you just do this in Vietnamese?
Yeah, at this point, we already did Vietnam. We already did Alaska. And we're already into our second travel trailer.
Yep.
Second RV. Yeah.
You know, I was so confused recently when all I heard was Vietnamese, because I remember when I found you guys a while back ago, it was all in English. And I was like, wait, why is this in Vietnamese now? And then why are the numbers so low? I think it was like, it was a lower subscriber count. And so I was like, I thought to myself, there must be two. And then I knew that I needed to ask you this is the question I had when I kind of figured it out. What is the difference in the way you communicate to the world when you do it in Vietnamese and then when you do it in English? Was there a certain persona difference in the way you guys communicate to the world, the way you guys reacted with each other? How are the two languages different from, because there's very few content creators that can do both languages and then have to make a decision.
Right. So the first time, I think we just didn't know what type of content we wanted to do. We just didn't know who we are and why we are doing what we're doing. And then when the Vietnamese channel came to life, and our family gave us a lot more feedback and saying, hey, when you're doing a Vietnamese, if you can just share about your life and just do it as authentically and raw as you possibly can, I think a lot of people can resonate with that, because I like your life, but I just can't watch it in English. Mm-hmm. And we just We were so terrible at Vietnamese at first. So I was terrible.
We were barely ever talking to each other in Vietnamese at that point.
In our household, we talk in English. Yeah. Off camera, we talk in English. Anyone we meet in real life, we prefer to talk in English. So only on our YouTube channel now
but
we
now
start talking.
But now it's natural.
Yeah, now it's pretty natural. We do a 50-50 split now because I think Vietnamese-wise, we have grown quite a bit on just that learning and how to actually communicate.
But the money on the Vietnamese side, Vietnamese language is not as much as the English side, or how does it work?
Yeah, no, it's not at all.
It's like
like half.
Yeah, almost like half. We have friends that we encourage them to start doing YouTube and start getting them into social media, showing them the ropes and helping them kind of understand how the whole social media world works. And now to see that they're getting the same amount of views we get, and we share data with each other all the time as a small little friend group. And they're, what you call it, a CPM is so much, is double or sometimes even triple ours as a Vietnamese channel. And we're okay with that because
we have a really large, like a good amount of like following that follow us in whatever we do, and we really appreciate that.
Yeah, we love our community. We wouldn't change it for the world, right?
Yeah, now. We wouldn't stop if like less people watching.
Yeah,
this episode is brought to you by Red Boat Fish Sauce. Some things will never be replicated by AI. The fragrance of fish sauce hitting a hot pan. The sound of your grandmother's voice telling a story only she knows. The feeling of a family recipe passed down through generations that are imperfect, alive, and completely real. Red Boat Fish Sauce has been a proud sponsor of the Vietnamese podcast for years because, like us, they believe in authenticity you can taste. And together we're bringing you the Viet Story Bank, a recording service built on that same belief. Your stories matter. Your family's memories, your lived experiences, your history, these deserve to be preserved exactly as they are. Untouched, unfiltered, they're human. So don't wait for the right moment. Learn more about the Viet Story Bank through the link in our show notes and pick up a bottle of fish sauce at H Mart, 99 Ranch, or redboatfishsauce.com.
And let me explain this to our listeners. The CPMs is basically the dollar per thousand views that we get. And that rate is based on the market. It's like a cost of a living allowance, like COLA. The way COLA works is depending on where you live, that's the amount of money that sort of like dictates the cost of living. And because the cost of living in Vietnam is so low compared to the US, the cost of advertising dollars is actually not even half, but it's like maybe a quarter to a tenth of what US prices are, because the cost of living is so high in America that the advertisers who are spending money advertising on YouTube or wherever your platform is paying a lot higher. But then the difference is the Vietnamese listening audience for people that look like us and speak Vietnamese is much higher because you got a lot of people in Vietnam that listen. But then you have some people in America that listen in Vietnamese. But if you have English speaking like us, but we're speaking about Vietnamese topics, so we look Vietnamese, then the chances of like the mainstream tuning into our channels is a lot lower than if we were white speaking English.
Right.
So there's all of this like give and take. And I wonder why you guys didn't decide to just keep both languages and keep both channels just rolling.
Yeah, we made a decision based on family's feedback. Family.
But it also, it's a lot.
Yeah.
We had three kids and we had a lot going on to be keeping two channels. Yeah, one channel is like hard enough to manage.
And then
all the traveling that we do, we still want a life, you know. We don't want to just focus on that as our life. We want to live our life and record it and not have to
over edits or over script or over plan. So when we we don't ever do any collaboration. You and probably one other collaboration that we recently just did is our first two collaboration now that we have worked with another creator.
Yeah.
And when we work with now two creators, there's really no plan to go into it. Like, hey, this is the topic. This is what we're going to talk. We just kind of like just free flow it. And yeah. If it becomes something, it becomes something. If it doesn't, it doesn't. No harm, no foul. And we just love the company and we just love the time together.
I'm so appreciative that you guys agreed to do this, because I can imagine, you know, it's, you guys have a lot to do. You guys have, you know, kids to raise and, you know, I'm sure trying to figure out the next step all the time, right?
Yes.
You know, I could, you know, like with a lot of our guests, we could spend hours and hours. So I have to be very like mindful because I have a lot of different modules of your lives that I want to talk about, like how do you spend the day and all of these things. But I want to talk about something that I think I caught on your channel recently. Did you guys go to Marian Days?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Are you guys Catholic?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh my God. So I've been to Marian Days many times in my young life, and I don't think Vietnamese America, like I can ask 100 people on the street, and maybe 3 people know of it. Maybe. And it's such a huge part of Vietnamese American history. That thing's been around for 50 years, I think. Or 78. Almost, yeah. 50 years.
Yeah. Yep.
40-something years now. And I've been to it, and it's just, some years it's been 100,000 people. I don't know, this year maybe 80,000. I don't know how many people this year.
Yeah, probably about 80 to 100,000 people. Yeah, it's the number is pretty consistent. This year is more hot than other years, but
Hot every year.
No, every year. Except for last year.
Except for last year. Yeah,
In its 80s last year, and it was just
so
beautiful.
Nice. So I was walking around with a long sleeve last year.
Yeah.
My God. Okay. Let me, because the RV life and Marian Days is one and the same almost. That is the culture. And it is, oh my God, one of the most magical experiences any human being can experience. But even more magical is if you're Vietnamese and Catholic.
If you're Vietnamese American, Catholic or not, I think Marian Day is an event is an experience for all Vietnamese American to be a part of. And, you know, we're not going to touch too much on religion, because that could be a very sensitive subject to a lot of maybe viewers or whatever, but you don't have to be Catholic to be there. Everyone is welcome, and it's just a group of Vietnamese community getting together and spending a weekend or 3-4 days together, camping, just having a freaking blast. And I say this in our vlog, no matter how hot it is, no matter how miserable it is, everyone there walk with a freaking $1 million smile because they're so happy being there.
It's the most, I went 2 years ago, and I fought the Catholic Church my entire life because my parents were diehard Catholics. They wanted us to become priests, and we rebelled at 14, 15. But my God, when we think about Marian Days, it's still so special to me. And I took my kids 2 years ago, and I remember, you know, walking in the evening and the smell of the hot summer heat of Carthage, Missouri. It just... And then you hear Vietnamese spoken every corner, and everybody's nyao, and it's just such a magical experience. I want everybody to know about Marian Days. In fact, Phuc Mập is coming on the podcast tonight to talk about, because did you guys run into Phuc Mập out there by any chance?
I
didn't know he was out there.
Yeah, he planned it weeks before Marian Days. He and I were supposed to go together, but I got busy at work So he covered it, and we're gonna talk about it tonight, because although I am not a practicing Catholic, just to see the community of people there, and for me when I was younger, it was a little bit more dangerous. And what I mean by that is much more gangsters and gang members would show up to look for women and girls. It was a place to equal guy. It was really that.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many people my generation met their husband and wives at Marian Days in the Midwest. Because at the time, it was like when we were all moving out of California to go do nails. Yeah. It was like that great migration out of California to go make a lot of money. So where is the place that you would go to meet all these Vietnamese people if you weren't living in Little Saigon? Oh, you would go to Marian Days, right in the middle of the country.
I did not know that.
That's that's pretty awesome to know. Yeah, she took me there 5 years ago. I was hooked. I mean, I grew up in Bear Lair in Houston all my life, and I've been around a big Vietnamese community, but I've just never been around a focused Vietnamese community that large in one place. And it was a real surreal moment for me. And I told her ever since that day, I want to come back every year.
Yeah, I've been gone since I was 10, so I've been like 5-6 times now.
It's I really wish more Vietnamese people knew about it, because it's, I mean, it, if you think about it, it's like the Coachella of the Vietnamese.
Yes 100%.
It's the Coachella of the Vietnamese, because you know, I don't know if they still do it, but like Asia, Paris by Night, they would alternate years. So one year you have Paris by Night, the label brings their singers, and then Asia would bring their singers the next year, and then Van Sun, and everybody would just come cover it, you know? It was such a vibe.
I don't think Asia and Paris by Night, do they exist anymore?
No. Because the labels are not there in that way anymore. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 And their performers are not there. But I'm sure they could. Yeah. But I don't know if that entertainment is there anymore.
Yeah, no. Yeah, we don't see the banner this year. But we could be wrong.
And like anybody I would know. I mean, I'm only 31, so
yeah. Oh, they had huge performers come out, and
I think it had Twin Air like 10 years ago, something like that.
So that probably was when it stopped.
Yeah, I have to get to close the window.
Yeah, it's one of those things where like I really hope that place grows, and what a special thing that exists in the Vietnamese community in a way is so special, very rare. Yeah.
We met a lot of fans there, because I guess since we're camping, that's where most of our most concentrated viewers are, like, there.
Yeah.
So did they recognize you and they would come up to you guys, or how did that work?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, it was awesome. Yeah, they just call our name and we just kind of stop and have a conversation with
our fans.
Sometimes
we would like bike. We go on a bike so it's faster. We go on a little electric bike and I hear people like talking in the background. Oh, that's like, you know, Song Yidong. It's so weird to me on this day that people are like talking, you know, not to you, but like not behind you, but you know,
you indirectly.
Before I got distracted with Marian Days, I've glossed over the money part, and I just want to return to it really quick. How much money do I need to do this? What are we looking not at? Like, how much money do I have to have in the bank that grows? And can you break it down, like how this works?
Yeah. So we had a very strict rule when we first started, and that's because we weren't making any money on the road. We had $100,000 set to aside, and then another about $100,000-$150,000 towards investments. So some total $250,000, right? And we say, okay, this $100,000 is going to last us how long, and how frugal can we do with it? And we try to make sure that we own all of our travels and everything like that outright, so we don't have a loan or debt.
No debt.
Now, of course, it's a little bit of an opposite now, because we're making
in America now, and like America runs on debt, so
so it's a little bit backwards now. So, but you can't take what we have now, because now we actually generate income while we're on the roll and collaborating with, you know, sponsors and brands and working with business all around the world now through our YouTube channel. So it's completely different now. But in before, we say $35,000 to $40,000
a year
was our budget. And that was a very open and flexible budget.
But you're talking about going to Asia, right? Yep. You don't need that much to really like live like a king in Asia. yeah. in Vietnam, especially.
I think he was mentioning more like traveling across the US.
The US?
Yeah, in an RV. Yeah.
So we were very strict on like $35,000, $40,000. And that cover fuels, that cover travel, food. And we break it down to like campground. And we couldn't do this really without the support of a system called Thousand Trails. So without that system, it would have been too expensive to do this lifestyle
for a campground.
Wait, what's a Thousand Trails?
Yeah, it's if you think about it, it's more like a timeshare. It's more like a timeshare. You buy into this so-called timeshare. It's called Thousand Trails, and we pay. We if we knew about it ahead of time, maybe we would have went used, but we didn't. We bought new, so we pay $8,000 for a year for a lifetime membership to be part of it. And then we maintain a member fee about $700 a year. But to break it down, and we broke down the math, if we just go to campground, stay there every single day for months on end for 12 months, it would cost us more to have that initial investment. So we have profit from that membership to probably two or three times over.
So
it's $8,000 to buy in, right? And it's $700 a month, right?
Yeah.
$700 a year.
And you can stay there as long as you want?
Three weeks at a time. 3 weeks, you have to hop to another Thousand Trail. But you can go from one Thousand Trail to another Thousand Trail and just be back and forth. So like, for example, when we stay in Texas for 2 months, we'll just hop between the two, and it's about an hour away from each other. Mm-hmm. And we'll just bounce back and forth. And we stay there as long as we want.
It's cheaper than actually like a mobile home park. Home park, it would be much more expensive on monthly payment.
Yeah, 100%. It's $50 to $100 a night at an RV park.
At a resort. Yeah.
At a resort. Uh-huh. And a cheaper...
And they have pool, it's gated, and it's safe, and they have also community. That's where we really like about it, that we found a lot of our good friend, that's probably lifetime friend now, in these parks.
Yep.
They are also full-time RVers.
That's how the economics of this works out now. I get it. Because now you're basically spending, what, $20 a day for rent?
Yeah.
No, not even.
Less than that.
It's $20 a month.
A month,
right?
Yeah.
No. It's 700 divided by 12.
70, yeah. 60-something.
Dollars. Oh, my God. So it's like $2 a day.
Yeah, it's cheaper. If you think about it in the scale of it, the upfront cost is very expensive, but if you're committed to doing this for a long period of time, it is significantly cheaper to have it than not have it.
Yeah, and it's actually cheaper to have it than to pay a mortgage, to pay somebody to mow the lawn, upkeep the big house. I mean, that lifestyle of really living in settled in one place is really what shackles and imprisons us, because we have to stay and maintain one house, one property, and it is so much more expensive than paying $2 a day. But then you have to really have it set up that you have an RV, you have to have income coming in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just for the RV, we opt to have like one of the biggest RV just so we can be comfortable, because we know this is what we want. We don't need more space than this. And this will be probably for the next 5 more years.
5 to 10 more years.
We can be in. And it costs,
And is it self-sustaining yet? Like the money is like you're making, you can make more money than what you're expending?
No, we're not there yet.
Not there yet.
We're still trying to figure that part out. But luckily through many years, I mean, we've been self-sustaining ourselves now for the past 5 years, haven't been able to work for a boss or report to anybody for the past 5 years of doing this. So
it's worth every penny.
And it's worth every single penny. Yeah. And every single day we're figuring it out. Every single day we're hustling like everybody else. And we're just figuring all this out. We don't have the answer to everything, but I'm sure through trial and error we'll find a way.
Yeah.
Well, for my mentality, it's like, we're young, what's the worst thing that can happen?
Go back to work.
go back to work.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. Yeah, I mean, to today, I still have people in the car industry wanting me to come back and work for them. So I know that is not a closed door.
Sound like it's terrible.
So yeah, it doesn't.
Okay. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think tomorrow I can get a job that will make, you know, anywhere between $10,000 to $15,000 a month. So it's not scary to me.
And yeah, it's America. Yeah.
And here's the craziest part of it all. You guys have been on the road for what, 2 years now?
No, we've been on the road now for 4 years.
Four years. Nobody can ever take this 4 years away from you.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's such...
We have done so much.
It's like, you can't even put a price tag on this 4 years.
Yeah. There's zero price tag. I mean, I wouldn't change this for the war. I mean, we haven't been working or reporting to anyone for 5 years. The first year, I took my daughter to school and pick her up every single day. Attend every single parent conference, attend every single activity at her school event. So, was there for her graduation. I mean, my parents was never there for any of my graduation going to school. So I felt very, very blessed to be able to be there for my daughter. And then for the past 4 years, we traveled, we saw so much and learned so much and have met so much amazing people. I don't know how to put it into words. It's been really amazing. I feel really blessed. So,
you know, I think we've been sharing a lot of like really good stuff with you guys, but what are some of the downsides or the pain points of doing and living this way?
Yeah, it's hard for us because we always try to look at the positive side because I always feel like there's more positive than there are negative.
So, yeah.
But, you know, the first thing for everyone is always so scary. And I think, you know, I think that would be kind of like, I guess, our downside. I'm a very handy person. So if something break or something messed up on the roll, I always try to be calm and try to fix it. But the beginning stages of, you know, hauling this big fifth wheel around with a big truck. I've never drove a big truck like this before. I've never pulled a big trailer like this before. So everything is always super scary.
Yeah.
Making the wrong turn and going down the wrong row and potentially can rip the roof off of your RV or damaging the RV, you know, stuff like that. Stuff like that you have to always consistently overcome and try to like figure out. I think the adaptability and the perseverance of trying to always be a problem solver is always going to be there. But that's not a negative to me.
It's
really an exciting part.
I say kid making friends, but we kind of solved that problem.
We did solve that problem early on. That's kind of wild.
How did you solve it?
Well, a year in, we were doing Thousand Trail, and we met a lot of Futem family. And like I say, we sometimes travel on the same path. So we see each other over and over again.
Yeah, we caravan with families for several months. Yeah, and we just go to RV parks with each other, our kids.
We're actually meeting up soon, again, a whole group of us.
So. In September. Four of us are going to gather together, and I think we're going to have probably about 15 to 20 kids all in one place together, just playing and hanging out. Yeah.
Yeah.
What a beautiful image, you know. Yeah. God, it's guys, rename your title to Dream Life, some Dream Life. It's a really nice thing. Do you guys experience? God, I hate this question, but I'm curious.
Sure, we're open book.
Do you guys experience racism on the road?
You know, because of the way I look. I think majority of people that look at me for the first image, they think I'm Hispanic.
No, we have the opposite.
Yeah,
people come up and talk to us all the time. Like, are we that looking friendly or something? Like,
I don't know. I don't know. Because of the system that we are a part of, I feel like everyone here,
they get it.
They're super friendly, and they are part of this system that we're in because they want a safe environment. They want a place for their kids to be able to.
Or retire people.
So it's pretty much nice old people that are retired or families that just want a safe environment for their kids to be able to walk out the RV and run to the park without their parents' supervision. So
yeah. So that makes sense.
So we actually feel safer in RV park than personally.
Yeah.
Everyone say hi to each other when they walk by. The first year really wear me out. Like, everybody's saying hi to everybody. We don't really do that in neighborhood, really.
We wave, but that's it.
Yeah. I get it now. It's a closed system, actually. The Thousand Trails is a closed system, and eventually you kind of get to know the people that... You know, my final question is, it sounds like as long as you do this for... when I think about, like, how many states there are in America and how many cities and things to see, eventually you do all of it, right? You probably cycle through the whole country. Is that something that you guys think about, or is it something that you can do America for a long time? Or do you feel like there's an infinite loop here that you can always explore America, or will it get old one day?
I feel like America, I don't think for the lifetime of your existence, you can discover all of America.
Really?
I just really don't feel like that. I feel like every new place that we have been to have always blown my mind and have always been better than
there's
the previous
place.
There's
so much more that's on my list.
Yeah.
Wow.
That we haven't been.
Yeah, there's an endless amount of possibilities, endless amount of challenges, an endless amount of stuff that you're willing to put yourself through. The panhandle between the top of Alaska all the way into the southern part of South America is a trip that I would love to do one day. And
so you guys are thinking about South America, doing this in South America?
One day,
yeah, we would love to.
We have a lifetime.
We have a lifetime of exploring an adventure to do with our family. Yeah,
and then Canada,
covering all of the province of Canada, going to Baja. We have never went there. Mm-hmm. I don't know. There's just so much, and it depends on your hobbies. If you like lobster, you like fish, you like whatever. And there's endless possibility that the role can just take you to.
Wow. And with Thousand Trails, is it Canada and South America or Mexico too?
There's one in Canada.
Yeah, there's one in Canada, and then the rest you could probably have to pay for, like, state park and stuff like that. But it's very affordable. We made that trip before, and I think we can make it. We can definitely make it work on a budget. Just kind of pre-planning is important. Yeah. To touch on that, future-wise, looking for us, we probably are looking to... What happening?
There's a worm in there.
this is the challenge right here. You guys are seeing the challenge.
Yeah. There's like a straight-on caterpillar inside her skirt. I just flicked it off. You guys want to see the caterpillar?
Yes, I do want to see the caterpillar. This is crazy.
Oh my God, I felt it and I was like, it's soft.
So if you're like,
that is one of the challenge, but we love nature. Honestly, our kid would come out and like pick at the frog and just put it up in Evie would pick up in her hand and just like play with it for a little. We had spider pets for a while.
Wow. So they are taking this caterpillar off of Jenny's pants or
Let me show it to you guys.
Okay, so this is a first on this podcast. Oh wow.
There's a caterpillar that was just on her skirt.
Wow.
I think this is gonna grow to be a really pretty butterfly.
That's a big caterpillar.
Oh, it's on my laptop now. Yeah,
there's a lot to do in America, and we're not planning to just stop in America. We done Vietnam in RV before. Japan in RV before, and we would like to continue RVing in other countries.
Yeah, we'd love to do in Europe. We'd love to do Australia. Now that we have a smaller truck camper, I would love to set up our truck camper and ship it overseas and use our truck camper and discover more overseas whenever we have that opportunity.
Yeah,
I mean,
sometimes we get bored in America. Yeah.
You guys are really living the life that so many of us fantasize, for sure.
Aw, thanks.
Are you guys coming out to California anytime soon?
We definitely do want... We love California so much. We definitely do want to make a trip back to California.
We haven't seen half of it.
Yeah, we haven't even seen half of California yet. And I feel like we did a lot when we were there. But there's so much more. Yeah, we definitely will make it back. I just don't know when yet.
Whenever you guys make it back, I'll call a few social media people, like Vietnamese people. And Well, I think we should all take turns covering you guys. I think your story is fantastic. I think more Vietnamese people around the world should know about you. I think there's more Vietnamese people in Little Saigon should definitely, because, you know, there's a lot of people that have a lot of money in Little Saigon.
Yeah.
That I think should get on the road to leave Little Saigon. You know, they've been there for 30, 50 years. And
yeah, there's a huge RV community in California. Actually, the two gentlemen that run the whole Facebook group, they're really nice. It's Asian RV group.
Vietnamese?
They're both of them are Vietnamese, but they're like American Vietnamese, so they prefer to speak English, and they host it for Asian people, not just Vietnamese, but majority of the people that are in the group are Vietnamese.
But they're not full-time RV guys, are they?
No,
they're not full-time, but it is giving a Vietnamese community in California an opportunity to go and bring their camper out and camp at the beach or go in a resort and enjoy companies of Vietnamese people, right?
Enjoy the same thing.
I know two of them, I think. Dr. Lu. Dr. Lu, he's been on our podcast.
You should get him on too. He's very interesting.
I had Dr. Lu on podcast, and then he has another friend, Tiger Don, is another therapist that's in the camp life.
Right.
Amazing.
Yeah, they both love it. Yeah, they're actually Antoine, right? That's his name.
Chan
is Lu's
the admin.
I mean, he's the one that kind of like motivate us to do Japan camping. So after hearing him doing it, we were just like ecstatic. We were like, oh, I can't wait to do it now. So, yep.
Thank you both so much for agreeing to do this. I know that sometimes, you know, you don't know who these people are, who's asking for interviews, and, you know, to be to be accepted for me to come on the podcast, for you guys to open up like this is really a privilege for me to sit and talk to you guys.
Oh, thank you so much. Those are such kind words.
It's so easy to talk to you.
Yeah, it's very easy to talk to you as well. So if anyone that are getting invited by you, I think they should feel honored and have a great conversation. And I think, you know, you bring such a positive and a good spirit to the whole conversation. I absolutely love it. We had such a blast. So.
Thank you. Thank you both so much. And please, the next time you guys are in California or plan, give me a few hours because I definitely would try to call a bunch of social media people to sit and do what I did with you guys to really talk and get the message out. I think it's a wonderful life that you guys are living. It's not just wonderful. In one word, it's really inspiring. To see the way that you, because it really completely removes the cultural heaviness that we experience living in these tight communities of Vietnamese people sometimes. And, you know, being able to like really spread out and see the world and bring this information back is such a beautiful life that you guys live. Thank you so much once again.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I want to take a moment to, you know, just appreciate you and your podcast because I watched it and there was a comment that you made and it really resonated with me. You know, we as a Vietnamese American, first generation, second generation and third generations, however it is and however it's set up. Because I have kids, it resonated with me. We bring our kids to this war. And our show responsibility, and the reason why we do all of this is to be able to teach them and to be able to like nurture them and expand their mind. And I think you touched on that, and it really resonated with what we're trying to do, because that's all the ultimate dream is not to like go away from the traditional system, but to be able to teach our kid and brighten out their mind and to open them up to the war and to let them see more and know more and be more open-minded and unlike the older generation that kind of just stuck into one way of doing thing and not open to it. Like you say, I met a lot of people that are in Catholic religion and we're not going to touch on subject too much about that, but because of how our parents were raised and some parents were raised, they push it on their kids and make them drive away from the faith themselves. And eventually, yeah, when the kids grow up, they eventually either they find themselves back to it or not. But that's, I think, you know, if we just nurture that brain and we just take care of them in a way where we allow them to learn and allow them to be who they are. I think that's a beautiful thing. And I think you say it better than anyone. And I hope someone can watch that clip of yours, because that was a very touching clip for me to watch, for sure.
Thank you so much. You know, as you're telling me this, I wanted to make a request. I really want to experience Thanksgiving or Christmas season with you both on the road. Can we do this again towards the holidays? Because I just want to experience wherever you guys are. I want to live through you, vicariously through you,
yeah,
on the road. And if there's other Vietnamese people there or whatever, drop in. They can come in the screen and say hello. But I would love to kind of revisit you guys, even like twice a year, you guys are wherever you guys are at. I think this sort of like this backdrop that you guys are in and the conversation, it's so magical. And I want to hear, it's weird. I just want to stay in touch with you guys as like, yeah, you know, it feels like family, right? And I think in the holidays, that, I'm thinking about wherever you guys are going, oh my God, I wonder how they're doing. And I just want to check in the holidays if you guys are cool with that.
Yeah, I love that. I love it. You know, I think that every encounter comes with a reason and a purpose. And I think someone made this comment before, everything is up to faith. And I was not a big believer in that, but I really do think everything done to Vinyao for a reason. 100%. And the reason why we're here together. And I cherish every single interaction that we have with all of our followers, all of our subscribers in real life, any collaborator that we have worked with up to this point. I mean, everyone have been such a awesome blessing in our life and have just taught us many different things. But the future for us, I hope that it will be continue to be exciting. I think it will be exciting. I don't think it ever
a dull moment.
Yeah.
I can't be.
So hopefully hopefully we can bring everyone along, and hopefully one day we have a place to host people. That's our ultimate dream. So
like a farm, because I saw the last clip. It was like, oh my God, you know. Yeah.
So if one day we can have something like that, we love to host people and come and just hang out, just to kind of give them a little bit of a different perspective in life.
And you know, the thing about the two of you is like, I think the accumulation of being on the road for so many years, by the time you guys have like a house or a big property, and then you guys host people, the campfire stories that come from the two of you is so abundant because of the life that you've lived. Remember that one time we were, you know, it's going to be full of those evenings. I started out in the first 2 years doing a lot of Vietnamese language podcasts and English, but I think it threw the algorithm off. That's why I asked you guys about like the choice of doing Vietnamese and English. Eventually, I'm going to have to start a Vietnamese only language podcast, because it's still the same amount of like whatever. I'm still going to sit and talk to people every month. I try to do 15 podcasts, and it's going to have to fall in line with that. When I do set up that Vietnamese language side, I'm going to hit you guys up, and then we're going to do this entirely in Vietnamese.
For sure.
If that's okay with you guys,
we're great.
Because I know you guys' personality might be different in Vietnamese. It always is. People speak Vietnamese and they think differently, they act differently. We kind of get to different angles when we speak Vietnamese. The conversation.
It's just the wording.
Yeah, the words. Yeah, for sure.
It's like sometimes it's like hard to translate between English and Vietnamese. Yeah.
Totally. And I don't think any language is better than any language, but I just think very different answers coming out. And I want my mom to hear this too. You know, I want my mom and, you know, her sisters and brothers to thung thuk guk song, you know, just by seeing you guys.
We can tell them you can watch guk song hee dong YouTube.
Yes. Absolutely. I'm going to definitely show my mom this for sure. But thank you guys once again. Appreciate you both.
Yeah, for sure. Yep, appreciate you. Thank you. Thank you for having us on. It's been awesome.
Same here. Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Crystal Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.